And with a look at our trails on the phone with us from Mountain Trails Foundation, Charlie Sturgis, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, things are improving right up until maybe tomorrow. Who knows, right? It'll be hard to tell what happens. So we'll see. But right now, currently, Rick and some of the other crew have been out riding around seeing just what was going on, what's cleared off. And what they're reporting at the moment is Armstrong is clear to mid-mountain, but once you're up there, you're going to have a little bit of snow probably going either direction, more snow probably going towards Deer Valley. But as you can see, even looking at Iron Mountain, looks pretty clear. But once you get around Iron Mountain, you probably also run into snow. So that depending on what you want to do, you can walk through the snow, but try to avoid the muddy stuff. Also, Spiro is clear from the top to the bottom, but once again, you get up there and you have limited places to go. So, and same with CMG. Jenny's is also clear, but it does have patches of snow down low, which we typically see from the terrain parks and so forth. So I would say that lots of things are looking pretty good out there. I know that some folks have been riding over on the WOW Trail, so that's pretty much good to go as well. So that's another option. And I also know that people have been riding the full loop on Riverview and Coyote Gulch. So lots of riding has opened up and running and hiking as you see fit. So I think you can have fun out there. Just want to say thanks to everybody that is embracing the virtual races that we're planning on putting on this summer. We're getting people signing up, and they're pretty enthusiastic about kind of the concept. So, I know it's a good punt for this year. This is what we got to do, but I really appreciate the support. So, Leslie, have a great Memorial Day weekend. Hope everybody out there does as well. Be safe and have a good time.
Yeah, so I know this is part of your triple trail thing that you're doing virtually. You're doing Tour de Suds virtually as well? Or have you decided that?
Well, you know, we haven't announced that. As you well know, the county probably won't go to above gatherings of 50 by the fall. So let's put it this way. We've got the socks. We're ready to go. If we have to do the virtual format for that race, then, you know, I think instead of not having it, we want to at least make sure we have it. And, we're gonna try to do it one way or the other. So if it has to go virtual, we'll do what we're doing now is we'll flag courses and basically ride it within probably the month of the race itself. So, we'll try to come up with some other fun stuff. That one we're hoping we can maybe do. So we'll see what happens, Leslie.
Okay. And then real quick, what's the dead tree fallen dead tree situation look like out there?
Well, probably it's going to change once again. We're going to get 25 to 40 mile an hour winds. We've done a lot of clearing, but it has been nowhere near as much clearing as we had to do a few years ago. So it's really the wind thing. If you do encounter dead trees on the trail, especially you can't get around them at all, it doesn't really matter. What I really like, and some people are use their phones properly for this, is do a pin drop for the area, take a photo, and send it to us. That is the easiest way. You can just send it to Rick or Charlie at mountaintrails.org. That is the easiest way for us to get up there and quickly get it out of the way. Our crew will be gone this weekend, so we will probably get after all the trees on Tuesday. That 40-mile-hour wind forecast is always a little rugged, so we'll do what we can.
All right. Charlie, thanks.
You bet. Bye-bye, Leslie.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be talking with Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla with the latest on the new health order for Summit County that went into effect. Park City Council member Tim Henney will be on the phone with a recap of last night's meeting. And finally, People's Health Clinic Executive Director Beth Armstrong with details on how the clinic has shifted the majority of its patients to telemedicine. Joining me now on the phone, I have Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla. Good morning to you, Rich.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
Doing great, thanks. So, let's see, when the last health order was released, it was to go until July 1st. It only lasted a month and instead of two. Are you okay with where we're headed here?
Well, again, all of our decisions have been really data-driven. And looking at the data in Summit County related to COVID-19, current spread, hospitalization, recovered cases, et cetera, strongly suggest that it's appropriate for us to move into yellow. Now, that said, we're going to continue watching the data very, very carefully and making sure that we don't get some spikes that we're not able to deal with. And so, you know, I just want to encourage the community that while we are moving into yellow, and I want to congratulate everybody, businesses, community, for their behaviors, because the fact is the reason we're able to move into yellow is because of the safe behaviors that people have practiced. We need to continue that. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves reverting into a situation that we don't want to have.
So the biggest change are that gatherings can increase from 20 to 50 people. What does that mean? I mean, does that mean that we can put in 100 people at the Basin Fieldhouse now with 50 people on each level?
Well, the gathering size is just frankly, the language in the governor's order is a little bit confusing. So let me take a moment to explain it. You're right that the general number moves from 20 to 50. However, the governor does allow in his yellow phase guidelines organizations to have events that are larger than 50. And if you go to our order, we've defined organizations. In essence, they can be businesses, nonprofits, et cetera. They're all defined in the order. And so the answer to your direct question is if an organizer wants to have an event, they absolutely have to abide by the social distancing guidelines in the governor's yellow plan. But if they can do so, then they are actually allowed to have events larger than 50, up to 999. Again, they have to have in place a plan for social distancing, and they need to assure that the core measures and guidelines within the governor's plan are implemented at that event.
So in this case, the Egyptian Theater could reopen as long as that social 6-foot social distancing is enforced?
That is correct, yes.
All right. The Echo Center, however, cannot because the school district's closed, is my understanding.
Well, that's the case right now. That's also the case with the Eckerd Hill pool, is my understanding as well. But I'm doing some digging on that this week. I've actually got a couple of phone calls that I placed yesterday. We have deferred to the state superintendent for those decisions. And, of course, the governor has closed the schools. And so I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing some variation there, but I've received quite a few questions around that, so I'm trying to get down to the bottom of it.
All right. As part of the yellow risk level, team sports are allowed. Is there any key in terms of this? I mean, what does that mean that we're going to have kids starting to play soccer and football practice and all of that?
Well, so again, we are waiting for clarification from the state. But right now, and in fact, if individuals, the Utah Department of Health has a nice guideline, a pictorial that kind of explains. You can go to utah.gov and search Utah Health, click on the coronavirus link, and there is a diagram there called Utah's low risk phase. And it does say that symptoms need to be checked, that in fact team sports are allowed, but that there has to be a screening at the event. Different health districts are interpreting this a little bit differently. One thing we know for certain is that training is allowed. They can be group training sessions, but they do need to be socially distanced. They can have coaches. They can do fitness training. All of that is allowed. What we're trying to get clarification around is the school team sports component. And the reason for that is similar to facilities that are tied to schools. We're trying to get clarification about what is allowed when it's aligned with a school. But your specific question to soccer. Yeah, Utah U Soccer has contacted us and has put in a request for approval for training. And that request is allowed to go forward. And so we are going to see more of that. The thing I want to stress here, though, again, is while I think we probably all view that as a good thing, it's certainly good for the children or the youth to be able to participate in those events. It's incumbent upon the organizer to to have a plan in place that meets the guidelines of the governor's recommendations. And you know, that's we just need to stress to people that the behaviors that have led us to the place where we have favorable numbers need to be maintained. That doesn't change.
So the council yesterday at its meeting really stressing the importance of personal responsibility in this phase. Tell us again what those responsibilities are and why they are so important. I mean, people seem genuinely confused about when they should wear a mask.
Well, I think Kim summed it up really well in the meeting yesterday. Wear a mask. You know, we're not ordering people to wear masks because the governor has chosen to not make that an order. And we're completely aligning with his recommendations. But it's smart to wear a mask. It is a little uncomfortable. Yesterday, I took a little break and went for a walk in Round Valley. And I had my mask in my pocket because there were no people around. But every time that I would see anybody approaching, it was in my shirt pocket. And as I approached people, I just pulled it out and slipped it on. It isn't a big deal. If we are in situations where we're going to be in a store or near groups of people, we need to wear a mask. And, you know, the thing we all need to realize is we're not necessarily doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for the people around us. And that's the mindset we've got to have. The other issues that you asked about, you know, a reminder, again, washing hands. One of the things that the governor's plan does, and that more and more Utah, with the publication of Utah Leads Together 3.0, there really is a difference between mitigating risk for high-risk individuals and what are considered low-risk individuals. We're all at risk of getting this stuff. But some of us that are in high-risk categories, so older, typically over 65, comorbid conditions, those can include, by the way, it doesn't mean you have to have diabetes. Being overweight is a comorbid condition. There are autoimmune conditions. If you have those things, you're in high risk. And you should limit trips to the store. You should limit exposure to groups of people. You should limit and monitor who you're interacting with, especially with other high-risk individuals. And so there is kind of a triage approach to this now, where we're hoping to be able to open the economy and get life a little bit back to normal while still protecting those individuals that are at greatest risk.
On another topic, a media backgrounder was held yesterday where experts from the University of Utah and Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital provided some updates on the newly discovered MISC. That's the multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. Do we have any of those cases here in Summit County?
I honestly don't know. I have not heard of any. It is an incredible, the more I've been reading about it, it's a pretty horrifying potential outcome of this disease. And I think that should remind us that, you know, while there's still a perception among a lot of people that this stuff isn't bad, it is very dangerous, and we need to take precautions to protect ourselves and others. Again, I don't know if we've had any cases in Summit County.
My understanding is that the guidelines say children should not wear masks. How come? Is it just because of their little nostrils?
Well, that's another area a little bit unclear, but generally, yes, the masks don't fit them. Also, they tend to touch the masks a lot, and they aren't washing their hands as often as an adult should. And so if they're touching areas that are dirty and they're reaching up and touching their face, there is some evidence that there's actually an increased risk of disease transmission. And so that's, but again, this is evolving. You know, the recommendation clearly is for adults to wear masks. But even that is, you shouldn't be touching that mask. And when you take it off, you should be touching only the outside of the mask. You should be laundering it if it's a cloth mask. There are still precautions that need to be taken.
So given where we are now, should we expect schools to open in August?
Well, they are forecast open. That's actually part of the yellow low-risk phase, that they will open for the 2021 school year. You know, this is going to be interesting. It says they're going to open. It doesn't say how they're going to open, and I don't have any inside information related to that. There are clearly schools that are very, very large across our state, across our country. And I have a hard time seeing business as usual. I have a hard time seeing, you know, perhaps close to 1,000 kids gathering in the lunchroom and sitting in close proximity to each other. And so, again, they are forecast to open, but I don't know what those guidelines are going to be. And, of course, we don't know where we're going to be with respect to COVID-19 when the school year approaches.
This week, Bill Malone from the Park City Chamber Bureau presented their plan of marketing our area to prospective visitors. The research he has shows people are not comfortable getting on a plane yet, so they're focusing their efforts on markets that are within a day's drive. So with places where we are now, I mean, what's the best approach from a public health standpoint when it comes to maintaining our positive trend with COVID-19 and inviting people to come recreate with us?
Well, again, you know, I think Bill's approach, to me it makes sense. And part of that is economic, but, you know, part of it is, of course, is just trying to be protective. We tend to, in Utah, we're tending to do pretty well, actually. If you look at our COVID numbers, things look quite good. And so I think the risk is, first of all, I'm not a big fan of the low-risk category, the name low-risk. We're still at significant risk for this stuff. It's still in our community. But that said, relative to other hot spots, Utah is doing quite well. So the risk isn't probably as great. I do worry about we're going to have hot spots flare up, you know, and right now Salt Lake City is still in orange. That doesn't mean they're a hot spot, but it means that they're being cautious, remaining to be very, very cautious. So I think we need to watch things like that. We're probably going to have other hot spots flare up. Utah County has been one, although their numbers are looking better right now. I worry about, you know, some of the smaller communities in our county who have been fortunate to not be real severely impacted by COVID-19. You know, that can change in a heartbeat. If one event is held that has a person or multiple people who are infected, all of a sudden, these small communities are finding this in a growing incidence in their homes and communities. So I do worry about it.
This week,
that said, it's reality, and I think it's a wise approach. I think one of our challenges economically is actually going to be to get people to engage in the economy again. Things have changed, and we've all gotten a little bit used to doing less interaction with our economy. And I think gradually that needs to change.
This week, Vail Resort CEO Rob Katz announced that while they intend to take their time to reopen, the hope is to have their chairlifts turning at all of their resorts by late June or early July. Does that seem reasonable to you?
It does. You know, one of the things that the data, finally we're having more and more sound data related to COVID and COVID spread. It's very, very clear that outdoors, the risks are mitigated. The indoors is where the disease is generally spread. And so, you know, as we look at the resorts opening, first of all, they've been great partners. I actually just this morning was looking at a proposal from Woodward that is very sound, very conscientious, and very, very responsible. And we expect exactly the same across the board with all of our large resorts. They've been great partners. But there are ways to mitigate the risk, and that's what they're focused on. The data are becoming quite clear on how they can do that, and I'm confident that they can do it. It won't be business as usual, I don't think. There'll be some tweaks, but I feel quite good about where we are right now.
I also wanted to ask you, Mike Lures with the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District told us about a study that the district is participating in, and it basically is poop may be able to tell us when the coronavirus lockdown can end. Is the health department involved in either of these studies? I mean, there was also, I saw in the Los Angeles Times, the Viabot study with Stanford.
So we're not, I wouldn't use the word involved, but Mike and Erica Gaddis, she's at the Department of Environmental Quality at the state, have both briefed us, and I've done a little bit of research on the methodologies. It's really intriguing. And the idea, you know, first of all, data and us monitoring and doing surveillance is really important. We need to be able to identify surges in our community, and we need to be able to identify those before individuals start showing up in large numbers at the hospital. And so the way I'm visualizing this is kind of a multi-tiered data approach, and I think utilizing the wastewater as a baseline, a potential baseline, one point of information, and looking at changes over time, I'm actually less concerned about the initial numbers of what it might suggest prevalence or incidence is in our community. I'm more concerned about the trends over time, because that may help us identify spikes. Now, of course, we're also doing ongoing sampling. We're going to be ramping up randomized sampling. And we're also talking now about doing greatly increased contact tracing and testing of all of the contacts of positive cases. And so I view this really as kind of the quiver of tools, and we'll use all the information together. And I think the wastewater information is super intriguing. And really, you know, I'm hoping that it more than anything, pun intended here, passes the smell test and helps us know that the rest of our data seem to be right. And so I think it's an important part of the package.
Yeah. And any updates with regard to antibody testing here in Summit County?
Well, no updates on the pilot that was done by the U. We anticipate that very, very soon. I got an email this week saying that they were looking at the data. We are talking, continue to talk about really when the time might be to ramp up antibody testing for specific groups of individuals. And that's part of our overall strategy. And we've been, of course, consulting with the state, Dr. Angela Dunn, state epidemiologist, and others at the state to really hone in on what makes sense. The antibody tests are available more widely now. They still have issues. There's generally high variability among them with respect to results. But I think
deaths in our country could have been avoided if we had shut things down just 2 weeks earlier. So I think we all owe you a collective thank you for just doing that. But in your mind, what would it take for you to bump us back to the orange and perhaps even the red level?
Well, we've got specific indicators. The big one is the R-naught value, which is really the rate of spread, how many people are infected by a single individual with the disease. If it's below one, we're doing pretty well. We've been consistently below one. In fact, we had a period of time in Summit County where we were at 0.26. That is a remarkably good R-naught number. And our threshold for that is 1.25. As we begin to, if we begin to creep up into that range, we'll take really a hard look at actions related to that. Obviously, new incidence cases, if we see a daily rise in the cases themselves, we're also watching really closely the interaction of recovered cases versus incidence cases, new cases, and looking at that intercept of those lines. And then finally, a little further down the curve, we're, of course, looking at hospital utilization. And so it's really, again, it's a package. We've got to weigh all of the data. Moving to orange, I personally think, you know, there is a chance of us doing this. You know, as we move into the fall season and we have more visitors and perhaps we have a surge in the fall, I think we all need to recognize the only way we're going to stay in yellow is for all of us individually and collectively to be responsible and to take precautions. Otherwise, we will find ourselves in a situation where we are going to be putting in new restrictions. And I need to note, the governor is supportive of that. That's not Summit County. This is every community across our state is looking at these same indicators. You know, he'll have, of course, being the lead official for the state, he'll have oversight and will advise us on those moves as well. Now, as far as actually going back into red, that takes a broader outbreak. But we've seen, demonstrated from the governor and from the state that they are data-driven. And if we see significant surges and what we saw that caused us to put in place the stay-at-home order initially was the very, very high growth rate of travel-related cases, and then right on the heels of that, community spread cases. And that combination tells us that we've had a new insurgence of the disease into our community at a rate that isn't acceptable, and that it is then spreading within the community and among the community at a rate that isn't acceptable. And as we are a travel destination, and I think we're at increased risk when compared to many communities with respect to us having to take steps again.
All right, Rich, I need to leave it there again. Thank you for your time this morning.
You bet. Thank you, Leslie.
That's Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We'll be checking in with Park City Council member Tim Henney. Well, the Park City Council met virtually yesterday. On the phone with a recap, I have Council member Tim Henney. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the budget department, giving you more details about how they're planning to come up with the $8.6 million in cuts to the provisional budget for 2021. You want to just hit on some of the highlights there, or...?
Well, it was just a continuation, you know, a little more in-depth on the capital improvement project side of the equation versus the operations. So this is what we do every year, but this year we're taking additional time and, of course, have additional constraints. So as opposed to working with limited money and resources, we're actually looking to make cuts. So that's the overlay. But, you know, things are on track. The budget guys are finding ways to defer and push out some projects. And then there was a big housekeeping exercise, house cleaning, I would call it, of just realigning where we get revenues and expenses and how those align on the timeline, which I think makes it more understandable for all of us on council and more understandable for citizens in general. But that didn't have any, that was being done in parallel to this other exercise. And I think it made it easier to do that and kind of bring our budget into a format that is just more understandable for everybody. So those were kind of the highlights.
The council discussed.
Well, actually, there was another one that, Leslie, you may get to this, but one of the items that was brought up was a Google mobility tracker, which I think is really fascinating. And it shows people's behavior, their travel behavior, which is a way of confirming or, you know, sort of giving us some good data on our assumptions regarding sales tax and where people are going and what they're doing. They could actually see people going to the grocery store, and they could even break out retail store visits. So this is a way, and what I took away from the data that was presented is that our assumptions at this point are tracking pretty well. In fact, we are a little more pessimistic in some of our basic assumptions on sales tax than what this mobility tracker was indicating, and also what the final March figures indicated. The March figures came in a little bit above, and when I say a little bit, I mean I think it was $200,000 or $300,000 above what our assumption was, which is not meaningful or significant with what we're dealing with, but it does show that we're not way off. And it does. It also showed that we have kind of found a bottom in people's behavior if you're using this Google tracker to see, to use as a reference point for sales tax expenditure. So we're not way off. We're tracking well, and we have a means of kind of finding a bottom, and it seems like we found that bottom, and we've even seen an uptick in the most recent data from the tracker, which is encouraging. So that was really fascinating.
The council also discussed the Park Avenue, the $4 million Park Avenue reconstruction project, considering about $700,000 being deferred from that bucket. You wondered, wouldn't this be a great time to do that sort of project now, since really all of the large events are not happening?
Yeah, but I was off a year on the ability to implement, and you know, we talk about being shovel ready. This is not going to be shovel ready until next year, so there's no way we're going to be able to take advantage of this year's lack of activity. It would have been a wonderful opportunity to do so, but the timing does not allow for that, and that was my oversight in sort of mentioning that as one of the ways to be opportunistic. There are other projects that, you know, we're we're seeing or benefiting from that, this big water line that's going on along 248 as you're leaving town. You know, that's good that that's happening now. The Three Kings water treatment, that's good that it's happening now. Just because, you know, there's less activity on the roads in general and less congestion, so we are benefiting in some respects. And then, you know, we also have some plans this summer for some improvements on Lower Park Avenue and turning the corner on 248 on Kearns that could benefit as well.
Yeah. Also, we're talking about almost $5.5 million coming out of the transportation budget. I guess I thought that why are we seeing such a big increase? Because I guess I thought we heard that we've got 100 less employees working this time than we did a year ago, most of them in the transit department.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. What are you saying? The reduction that was surprising to you?
Yeah. And that's just because of the tax revenues or the lack of tax revenues?
Yeah. I mean, most of the transit funding comes from tax revenue that's, you know, one form or another of a sales tax revenue. So the revenue side is going down. Our service levels have gone down. We are below our normal off-season level of service. So we're a whole tranche below where we would normally be at this time of the year, and we are thinking that during the summer we will simply go back to our off-season level of service, and all of that, you know, costs less and requires fewer drivers, and so that's, you know, we're just trying to adjust to the reality of the situation in the transit budget. Yeah. So, you know, part of it is less service at the county, so they get charged less. Part of it is less revenue coming in, and a lot of it is just less required or need for service. But we are trying to still meet the baseline essential service that a lot of people who are transit dependent rely upon, and so far we're doing that.
The DABC lease item was pulled from the agenda. How come?
I think just so that they can, a little more time was required to kind of get to the final, to where it could be approved. Okay. Yeah, it's really nothing. There's no holdup. It's just maybe some last minute issues needed to be clarified. But it's really, it was a staff request, and I'm sure it's just something in the contract.
Okay. It noted in the staff report that the DABC has said that it wouldn't have a store in Old Town if the city didn't want one so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why is that so important to have this downtown store?
Well, you tell me. We're residents. You know, we hear from our residents that it adds to the charm and the character of Old Town to have a liquor store on Sweet Alley. It's been there a long time. I mean, you know, we don't like losing things on Main Street. We've had discussions about the post office that kind of center around that same central issue of, you know, is it important to the community and people who live here? And do they find it worth, valuable, and worth subsidizing in some way or another? You know, I mean, when things like the Hula Bowl go away, people talk about it for decades. And if the liquor store on Sweet Alley went away, you'd probably hear people telling stories about when there was a liquor store on Sweet Alley and how great those days were. So, you know, it's part and parcel of that sort of conversation around the identity and character of the community. And, yeah, we think it's important.
The Historic Park City Alliance request to close Main Street to auto traffic on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., scheduled to begin in mid-June. The council does seem favorable towards that. You're apparently going to hold a special session next week to address it in more details and allow for some public input. But right now, what are you hearing out there in terms of the response to the closure? I mean, it sounds like residents widely in favor of this. Businesses, though, split on it.
I think that's very accurate, Leslie. Residents seem wildly enthusiastic. I would say, as high as 90-95% of the feedback and input and comments that we're getting from residents and citizens is in favor of repurposing Main Street toward more pedestrian activity and more pedestrian friendly. And I'll just kind of leave it at that because, you know, the details need to be worked out. But that came up in our visioning process. That was one of the big, bold actions that was requested. And I'll say that we are seeing confirmation of that in emails and in comments. Then you go to the business community. HPCA did a survey. Becca mentioned at the meeting last night that in that survey, 76% of the businesses found consensus around some variation of repurposing, and this was the one that they specified. And then we started to get into a conversation, and this is, you know, we hadn't put it on the agenda. I think that the community wants to have this this conversation and wants to be part of a public hearing. So it's important that we notice it, that we put it on the agenda, and that we have a what I would call a full-blown community conversation with all the stakeholders involved. I think the merchants need to hear from the locals and how the locals feel safe, supporting their businesses and patronizing the businesses on Main Street. We are hearing, aside from that consensus of 76% that were identified in the survey at HPCA, what we are getting in emails is much more on the extreme ends of both ends of the spectrum. We're hearing from, I would say, a split is between, and it's an equal, it's a 50-50 split, don't do anything, leave it just the way it is, to, completely shut it down and repurpose the street to a pedestrian mall full time. So that's what we're getting in feedback from the actual merchants. And I think we've only received 5 or 6, maybe 7 emails at this point. They continue to come in. The HPCA did request that their membership write emails to the city council. So, that request was made 2 or 3 days ago. And then there was a follow-up request. So, I think we've received 6 emails that I could directly associate with that request from merchants on Main Street, but it's three saying shut it all down and 3 saying don't do anything.
Yeah. So,
but then you have this consensus of 76% of those surveyed who say, a limited version of pedestrian mall sounds good, which is what they're presenting.
All right. You didn't have a meeting scheduled for next week. So are we talking about having a meeting next week to discuss this, or are we going to wait until the next regular session?
That's going to be determined by staff to some degree, but we, as we are open and receptive to ideas from the HPCA and the membership on Main Street, whether they're in the HPCA or not, we are also receptive to when we can have a meeting that is most effective and efficient. And if staff can get one together for next Wednesday or Thursday, was the idea that was put in, posited by City Manager Matt Dias at the meeting, then we're receptive to doing that. We all have the ability to do that. And if it has to go a week longer, then, that's going to be determined by what progress staff can make and kind of putting a presentation together and having it make sense and having the public participate.
All right. The council decided to give $25,000 towards Central Wasatch Commission. There was a lively discussion. You figure $25,000 is enough?
Yeah, we do. We think $25,000 is enough. And, in part, this is following the lead of Summit County. Chris Robinson is the representative from Summit County. I believe he is the chair of the CWC executive board. Our mayor, Andy Bierman, also is a member of the executive board, is my understanding. So we have 2 seats on the CWC executive board. Summit County authorized $25,000 as their membership contribution. And this has gone down over the years. And even before COVID-19, we were discussing a lower amount as our contribution. This is also reflecting that pre-existing trend as well as COVID, which kind of lands us as what we see as it's a pretty minimal contribution to remain in the membership. All the other jurisdictions and communities have re-upped, and they're even adding, I think, Brighton is going to be joining if they are approved at the next meeting, and maybe there was another community as well. So they're adding a couple of communities. So, yeah, we think there's value in continuing to push initiatives.
All right, Tim, I've got to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
You bet, Leslie. Have a good day.
That's Summit County Council Member Tim Henney. Well, on the phone with an update from the People's Health Center, I have Executive Director Beth Armstrong. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much. So in light of COVID-19, the health clinic has transitioned the majority of your patients to telemedicine. So who do you still have coming into the clinic?
That's a great question. And we had at one point in time, we started almost immediately transitioning over to telehealth visits, knowing that a lot of our patients who do need regular care, some of our chronically ill patients that not just well visits, but those that need insulin or prescriptions or chronic illness care, they still need to come in and see us. And for that reason, we tried to implement telemedicine almost immediately at the clinic. And it went really well. And at one point during this time over the past about 2 months, we had almost 90% of all of our visits being done through telehealth. Of course, we still had to see our prenatal patients, and we also had to prioritize the in-person newborn care and newborn well visits. So those were the things that we were seeing in-house, and then everyone else we were doing via telemedicine. Over the past 2 months, we did find that it was difficult for some of our patients, and now we're transitioning back a little bit to having it closer to 50% of our visits being done via telehealth. For some of our patients, it's actually easier just because they don't have to travel to the clinic, wait at the clinic, and then be seen and then leave. They can just see us from home, or some of them are even taking some time off, a few minutes off from their jobs, walking outside and having a quick telehealth appointment and being able to go right back in and go back to their jobs. So it was beneficial for some, but not for all. And so we'll try this for a while and slowly transition back to something. I don't think we'll ever not do telehealth. I believe that it is a better way for many of our patients and providers, but we just have to find that balance. I also think that and that's a great transition, to we need to continue our immunizations of our children through 24 months of age whenever possible, and because of that, and because of both Dr. Gallagher and Dr. Hanrahan's hard work on it, we are now going to start doing vaccinations of these children at People's Health Clinic. We've been approved by the state to be a VFC, which means Vaccinations for Children Clinic. This is actually really a big deal for us. We've never done these childhood immunizations in the clinic for our patients, and now we'll be taking that over from the health department. And it's actually less of a barrier to care, because in the past, we would have these parents come in, that the kids would have their visits, and then we would have to refer them over for immunizations. And now it'll be all one-stop shopping at the clinic.
Sure. So does the funding come with that as well?
We do, we do receive the vaccinations are discounted to us. We don't get paid for doing the vaccines because, as you know, we are we don't do any billing at our clinic, so there would be no Medicaid funding for that. But the vaccinations do come to us at a much reduced cost. And at the end of the day, when we're making decisions about spending money, the first question we always ask is what's best for the patient, and we truly believe that this is best for the patients and the families.
Yeah. So in terms of your needs in of funding, how is that working now with, of course, there's so many other organizations that also need help?
I think every nonprofit in town is needing assistance. There's not one nonprofit that I know of that's not being affected by the virus in some way. For us, we've been very fortunate to be supported by the Park City Community Foundation with some of their emergency granting, which is we've had an increase in costs, we've had an increase in patients and a decrease in the number of volunteers. At one point, we didn't have any volunteer physicians coming into the clinic. We've recently invited them back. So it's almost everything was going in the wrong direction a few weeks in, and now we are coming out on the other side of it. So volunteers are coming back, and we'll be able to meet the increased need due to people losing health insurance. When people are employed, they're normally, many of them employed and covered through health insurance by their employer. When they lose their job, they're covered. Unless they take COBRA, they'll be covered until the end of that month. So we expect to see an increase based on people letting go at their jobs. We'll see that increase maybe anywhere between 2 weeks to a month after they're let go of their jobs. And some of these people have chronic illnesses and will continue to need that continued care. I'm not just talking about coming in for annual visits or well visits. These are people who need medication management, and we plan on filling that need and are ready to do so at the clinic.
Okay. Hey, Beth, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just, we're going to be putting out some information, and I'd love to let you guys know about it when we're going to hold, because all of these well child vaccinations have been put on hold over the past 2 months. We're going to need to do some catch-up work. So we're going to have some vaccination clinics, and we'll let you know when those are happening. And also, we'll be doing some of those immunizations for school readiness as we get closer to school opening back up. So we'll let you know when those are. And we just thank the community for their show of support and love for everything we're doing at the clinic. And just hope you all stay safe and be well.
Okay. Beth Armstrong is the Executive Director of the People's Health Clinic. Thanks for your time this morning.